I'm Dr. Trish Murray. I am an osteopathic medical doctor and have been practicing medicine for 15 years in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. I started out as a primary care physician, and then I went on to specialize in non-surgical orthopedics and osteopathic manipulative medicine. But over the years, I realized more and more that the underlying inflammation, toxicity, and autoimmunity that people are suffering with are the root cause to most health problems. So, I also went on to become a specialist in functional medicine. My website is www.tmurraywellness.com, and I encourage you to go to my website. There is a great deal of free information because my mission is to empower you to optimize your own health through education, community, and support. Hi there, folks. Welcome to this talk on scientific research to support medicinal mushrooms. I'm going to be talking in this talk about mushrooms in general, and then I am going to be having two purposes in this talk. First, one of the purposes will be to review a bit of the immune system with you, because mushrooms, one of their most powerful things is they're felt to be immune modulators. They modulate our immune system to help us affect many different disease processes that I'll talk about. They also then have that pharmaceutical type effect, but they have numerous other pharmaceutical effects. So the second part or aspect of this talk or theme that will run through this talk are the multiple different pharmaceutical effects of mushrooms that research has supported. At the end of the talk, I will show you the reference list that I have developed this talk from. And a majority, two or three of those references are books that I read, but the other 9 or 10 articles are journal research articles from scientific research on mushrooms. So let's get started. So first of all, in general, there are estimated to be even more than 140,000 different mushroom species. But actually, we humans are only familiar with about 10% of those mushroom species. 50% of the ones we are familiar with, we know are edible. And of those known, 700 species are known to possess significant pharmacological properties, which you're going to be blown away, actually, as I run through this information and this research of how beneficial mushrooms can be to our overall health. Now, mushrooms contain, no matter whether we talk about their pharmaceutical aspect or not, first of all, if you are a vegan or you are a vegetarian, your issue is how are you going to get enough protein? And mushrooms contain up to 40% protein by dry weight. And those of us that want to cut back on our meat intake, but we don't really want to drop our protein intake, mushrooms would be very high on the list to adding to our diet. There are a small amount of lipids or fats in mushrooms. They also carry include many essential vitamins and minerals in them. And then these last three here, lignans, polysaccharides, and what are called triterpenes, are the main things within mushrooms that I read in the many different research articles that are the beneficial items when you talk about the pharmaceutical aspect of mushrooms. So we're going to go over now what are lignans, and what are polysaccharides, and what are triterpenes. So first of all, lignans and polysaccharides are both fiber, essentially. They're carbohydrate fiber material. Lignans, however, went on, and both of these, of course, are found in plants. They're chemicals, fiber and lignans are chemicals found in plants. But lignans are also a class of phytoestrogens. And phytoestrogens are estrogen-like chemicals that also act as antioxidants. They are also anti-inflammatory, and they can be anti-carcinogenic or anti-cancer. So these are, again, the major, lignans is one of the major things in mushrooms that were touted in the research as their beneficial effects. Next, polysaccharides, another fiber full of what are called, they talked about a lot, B-glucans. And what is this? Well, it's a carbohydrate, or essentially a sugar, but a starch, or a fiber, or a carbohydrate molecule that's composed of long chains, meaning poly is many saccharides, so many saccharides. So it's long chains of mono one saccharide units bound together. So these lignans and polysaccharides are both fibers. They're also both soluble fibers. Now, why is that important? So important because soluble fibers bind to bile acids in the small intestine. Bile is produced by your gallbladder and put into your gastrointestinal tract, or the intestines, the small intestines. And what happens is soluble fibers will bind to these bile acids, and bile acids are fats. And they make them less likely to then be absorbed into the bloodstream or into your body. And this, in turn, lowers your cholesterol level in your bloodstream because lipids or fats are cholesterol. So there's your mechanism of decreasing cholesterol with the use of soluble fibers, whether they be mushrooms or even oatmeal. Another effect is that soluble fiber also decreases or attenuates the absorption of sugar, which therefore reduces the sugar response after eating. So your insulin doesn't have to go up as high. You don't absorb as much sugar into your bloodstream. So if you are a diabetic or if you have metabolic syndrome, you absolutely should be considering increasing your fiber, and mushrooms are an excellent source of that. Finally here, this third mechanism that's discussed at the very end of this slide is, and once fermented in the colon, now remember, when you eat fiber, we do not, in our intestines, break down fiber well. What happens is the fiber passes through our GI tract and gets to our colon. And it's the bacteria that we live in friendly relationship with in our colon that actually either ferment, or the same term, digest these fibers in our colon. And when they ferment or digest these fibers in our colon, those bacteria then produce short chain fatty acids from as a result of that fermenting process. And this feeds the cells. The short chain fatty acids they produce feed our cells that line our intestines. We've talked about this before in other talks, but this is a really important point. Now, triterpenes, this third one, comes from either animals, plants, or fungi. Fungi meaning mushrooms. All create triterpenes that form the basis of almost all steroids. So again, the immune system is going to be affected as well as our structure. So now, let's talk about these pharmacological potentials of mushrooms. And the very first one we're going to talk about, and the one that was touted the most in all of the books I read and all the research so far that I've been reading, is number one, the immune modulating properties of mushrooms. Let's read this quote. The therapeutic effects of mushrooms, such as anti-cancer activity, suppression of autoimmune diseases, and allergies, have been associated with the fact that they're able to modulate our immune system. Possible efficient treatment was listed in many different articles for asthma, food allergies, dermatitis, inflammation, rheumatoid arthritis, atherosclerosis, folks, is vessel plaque that leads to, can lead to heart attack or stroke, hyperglycemia, HIV, tuberculosis, septic shock, and even cancer. So let's now talk about the immune system. And again, this is not, you know, a level 300 talk. This is a level 100. I'm going to introduce the basic concepts of the immune system and how the fibers and the things from mushrooms that we've found in scientific research are affecting and modulating your immune system. Now, what you need to understand here, and what I want you to come away with, is that our immune system has predominantly two different parts to it, or phases to it. And even before we get into that, make sure you understand that your immune system is your defense system. It is your military. And its job is to defend you and protect you and keep you safe from foreign things that try and enter your body. So the first part of your immune system is your innate immunity. And that innate immunity takes effect in the first 0 to 96 hours of defense against any stranger danger or any bug that tries to enter or enters your bloodstream or gets on your skin or you chew or put in your mouth or in your sinuses or wherever it enters your body. This innate immunity or this innate immune system is nonspecific. It has a broad response to foreign appearing agents. Now, what's foreign? Well, you can talk about a pathogen molecular pattern, meaning any bug or virus or fungus that enters your body is going to have some sort of a molecular pattern. And when your immune system sees it, it is going to recognize it as different from ourselves and different from our immune systems. It's going to recognize that molecular pattern as a pathogen or a stranger, and it's going to react against it. Or another type of foreign agent might be a damaged molecular pattern. And in parentheses here, you'll see an example of that, AGEs. AGE stands for Advanced Glycosylated End Products. Glycosylated is sugar. So end glycosylated end products are advanced sugar end products. What that means, folks, is, first of all, I'll give you an example. It's summertime and you're out cooking on your grill and you're making hot dogs and hamburgers. Well, great, but, you know, how about those burnt ones, the burnt hot dog or the burnt hamburger? Some of you out there I know love those. Well, I hate to tell you this and burst your bubble, but the cells of that meat, when they're burnt, are damaged molecular patterns. And when you eat them, are going to turn on your innate immune system to attack them, because your immune system looks at that burnt muscle cell in that meat as if it is a foreign agent. So what cells, examples of cells here that are active in our innate immunity against any stranger or molecular pattern that comes into our body that's looked upon as not ourselves, are white blood cells, macrophages, and natural killer cells. Now, what can these guys do? What do they do to kill the foreign agent or get rid of it? Well, phagocytosis, this word down here at the bottom of the slide, means that, for example, a natural killer cell or a macrophage cell can engulf something that they think is foreign. They'll go and engulf it and take it inside the cell and destroy it is one possibility. Another possibility is, or they can become an antigen-presenting cell. They might still phagocytize it, meaning take it inside themselves, but then instead of killing it right then, that foreign thing inside that cell causes that cell to become an antigen-presenting cell, meaning it's going to put receptors on its cell membrane to go then and tell other cells in our body that this bad thing is here and to become active against it. So it's going to go tell the adaptive immunity to get their act together and come help destroy this foreign agent. So it's going to go get supportive, you know, backup guys to come help. So this is the acquired immune response. And the acquired immune response, as you can see, takes time to develop. It takes anywhere from 4 to 5 days to be initiated. That those antigen-presenting cells from the innate immunity need to be activated, and then they are going to go and tell other cells, such as B cells or T cells, to become activated and produce antibodies against the specific, you know, stranger, foreigner. Or they're going to tell T cells to produce cytolytic cells. And you'll notice cytolytic, that word lytic, is lysis or destroy. So different cells are going to become active now. So you can create the adaptive immunity is the way that we create long-lasting pathogenic specific memory. So for example, with the cold virus, you know, we've all had a cold. We get a cold with the sore throat and the cough and other fever and things like that. It lasts, you know, anywhere 6-7 days. And guess what? It runs through. If you've never been exposed to this particular cold virus that you get, then first of all, your innate immunity needs to try and attack it. But it isn't strong enough to destroy it and get rid of it completely. So it then goes and calls in they become antigen-presenting cells, and they go tell B cells and T cells to come in and support them. And they develop the memory for this specific cold virus. So you know that when your children have first started school, what do they come home with all the time when they go to kindergarten or nursery school? They come home sick all the time. That's because their adaptive immunity has not built up yet and developed any memory against these viruses that all the kids are being exposed to. So they come home and they get sick a lot, and their innate immunity then develops, you know, an attack, and then they go tell their adaptive immunity to attack. And once their adaptive immunity has developed, they usually, and we, no longer are susceptible to that particular cold virus. So you'll notice that when your kids come home, when your children come home with an illness, you might get that virus or you might not. The viruses you don't get, you've seen before, and your adaptive immunity has long-lasting pathogen-specific memory against it, so you don't get sick. But the ones you do get sick with, you have not seen before. So you have to go through this process of a 6 or 7 day attack on this foreign agent or bug in order to destroy it. So I hope this has helped give you an overview of your basic immune system. This slide is a summary of what we've just covered. So with any immune response, you first are going to have a natural or innate immune response. The cells in your body that are most involved in that are listed here: dendritic cells, neutrophils, monocytes, natural killer cells, and so on. The processes that they can attack foreign things are with phagocytosis. Again, that's engulfing the foreign agent and trying to destroy it. Or they can engulf it and put receptors on their own cell membranes. And you'll notice there's an arrow that goes to the right over to B cells in the adaptive immunity that then creates antibodies against that specific foreign agent, whether it be a virus or a bacteria or a fungus or whatever. Another process that the innate immunity can do is an oxidative burst. Oxidative burst is basically some toxic chemicals to kill a foreign agent. And then finally, the process here with cytokine production. We produce cytokines that also then go to the specific adaptive immunity to as a signal to T cells. And the cytokine production tells macrophage activation, so that basically T cells can then go after foreign agents and lyse them or destroy them. Okay? So now, let's get back and look at how the mushrooms or the medicinal fungus has an effect on on different invasive things or how it modulates our immune system. So one study talked about medicinal fungus water extract. And basically at the top point here, it consisted of multiple different tinctures from different mushrooms. The turkey tail, the shiitake, the reishi are the three that were talked about in many, many different research articles. The dose of this particular tincture that's listed here for you was 400 milligrams per kilogram in people. And this extract was found in the study to possess the ability to activate, again, natural killer cells in your innate immunity to either directly kill tumor cells, such as a cancer cells, or to induce natural killer cells to secrete cytotoxic agents to elicit apoptosis of tumor cells. So let's talk about apoptosis. Apoptosis is when any cell in your body, whether it be a tumor cell or whether it be one of your natural cells in your body that's not cancerous, live out their life and die naturally. Meaning when a cell turns over or dies, that term, apoptosis, is the term for that process. But what this is saying is that the natural killer cells can secrete cytotoxic agents to elicit the death, apoptosis, of cancer tumor cells. So these two things are showing you how the mushrooms and the different agents within the mushrooms can cause your immune system to start destroying tumor cells or cancer cells. To continue this discussion, polysaccharides bind to innate immune cell receptors. They're called toll-like receptors, which activate again, and this is a review for you now. Number one, phagocytosis by macrophages and natural killer cells in the innate immune system. Or two, activate dendritic cells, which then become antigen-presenting cells, which lead to the activation of your adaptive immune response. So another pharmacological effect of mushrooms is antimicrobial effects. A microbe is a bug, like a bacteria or a virus. So again, your immune system is attacking these things. So which mushrooms were very effective in the studies I read to help you against bacterial or viral infection? From an antibacterial perspective, reishi, artist conch, and shiitake were the top ones that were discussed. And some of these even showed inhibition of what's called MRSA or methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. Folks, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus is a bug that is resistant, has become resistant to just about any antibiotic. So if to know that these different types of mushrooms would help you inhibit or become resistant for yourself against this bad bacteria, that's awesome information if your immune system is at risk. Antiviral mushrooms, again, reishi, but also chaga, turkey tail, shiitake, and mataki. These showed effect against herpes simplex virus, influenza, very, very common. Herpes simplex virus can be when you get the blisters on your lip, or like a cold virus, or you can also get them genitally, and even showed effect against HIV. I mean, that's amazing. Now let's talk about another pharmaceutical effect of mushrooms, and that's the anti-cancer effect. Now, what I learned also throughout my research, and I want you to know, is that first of all, in the Asian countries such as China, Japan, Korea, and other East Asian countries, that is where a majority of the research on the medicinal aspect of mushrooms has been done. They've been using for over 30 years medicinal mushrooms in adjunct treatment of cancer. So that's where a majority of the research information is from. And they have found over many years of research that mushrooms exert anti-tumor activity by stimulating, again, these hosts' defense or immune mechanisms. They talked the most about the following mushrooms: mataki, which has MD fraction in it, shiitake, birch polypore, and turkey tail, which has PSK, or what stands for polysaccharide K, oyster mushroom, shaga, and reishi. So what types of things did they find? First of all, stomach and colon cancer. They found that these mushrooms increased survival time and quality of life compared to those treated with chemotherapy alone. Again, this can be an adjunct. You can use mushrooms along with chemotherapy, and they've been found to be safe. Reishi mushroom was found to suppress cell adhesion, so the cells adhering to and cell migration of highly invasive breast and prostate cancer cells. Continuing with a different aspect of the research on anti-cancer, MD fraction from maitake mushrooms, the method in which it works, it appears to repress cancer progression and primarily exerts its effects by stimulating, you've seen this before in our talk here, natural killer cell activity to destroy the tumor. This maitake and MD fraction has been approved here in the United States by the FDA as an investigational drug to conduct phase 2 pilot study on patients particularly with advanced breast and, again, prostate cancer. Further anti-cancer information. Polysaccharide K, or that in parentheses there, PSK, and polysaccharide peptide, which is PSP, both are derived from derivatives of turkey tail mushroom, has again been used in cancer treatment in Asia for over 30 years. It's been used in adjunct treatment of gastric, esophageal, colorectal, breast, and lung cancers. It again increased the host versus tumor response. So again, it's infecting the innate and the adaptive immune system through natural killer cells and through lymphocyte-activated killer cells to destroy the tumor cells. Inhibition of tumor cell proliferation ranged anywhere from 22 up to 84% by increased cell cycle arrest and apoptosis, again, causing natural death of the tumor cells. This mushroom derivative had anti-metastatic effects, inhibiting enzymes that promote the spread of the cancer. When cancers metastasize into the bloodstream, that means they can spread into other parts of our body. And these mushrooms inhibited enzymes that promoted that spread. They stopped those enzymes. These derivatives of the mushrooms also act as antioxidants, which neutralize free radicals or toxicity within our bloodstream. Now, what's absolutely amazing to me is that PSK and PSP, which I just went over in the last slide, have been developed as pharmaceuticals in Japan and have been commercially available worldwide since 1977. And in 1985, folks, this tincture from these mushrooms ranked 19th on the world's commercially most successful drugs. Why do we not know this more in the United States? This is why I'm doing these talks. This is why I'm trying to express this information. So let's move on now to anti-allergy effects of mushrooms. The mushrooms that I talked about in the articles I read so far are reishi and Tricholoma populinum. They inhibit histamine release in rat mast cells. Histamine, folks, is what causes allergy responses in people with asthma, in people with skin allergy responses or sinus reactions with histamine. You've heard of drugs called antihistamines, and you use them if you have a lot of allergies. Well, reishi, for example, is a mushroom that would be helpful to you to stabilize your histamine and therefore not have as many allergic reactions. Next, in the fifth pharmaceutical effect of mushrooms, anti-atherogenic. Atherosclerosis, folks, is the buildup of plaque in your arteries that can then lead to heart attack or stroke. But again, what I want you to understand is that your total cholesterol number if it is not astronomically high, is not what causes heart attacks and strokes. What causes heart attacks and strokes, folks, is if your cholesterol or your lipids and the fats in your bloodstream are inflamed and toxic. Then they cause damage to the cells that line your arteries, cause an injury to the inner lining of your artery, get in behind those cells and inside the wall of your arteries, and that's when plaque starts to develop. And what this is saying about oyster mushrooms is that oyster mushrooms decreased cholesterol and inhibited lipid peroxidation. Lipid is fats, and peroxidation is the inflammation or the oxidation or the toxicity of those fats. That, therefore, is what leads to the development of the plaques. So if you're going to inhibit that with the oyster mushroom, then you're going to decrease your possibility of developing plaques and decrease your risk of heart attack or stroke. And so you notice in this study, oyster mushroom decreased the size of atherosclerotic plaques that were being followed in the rabbits in the research study. The other thing that's amazing is that oyster mushroom has a compound in it that is lovastatin-like. You've heard of lovastatin or statins. Statins are the most common prescribed medication for people with high cholesterol or high triglycerides. Oyster mushrooms naturally have a lovastatin-like compound in them. So that's an effect of how they can be atherosclerotic, meaning anti-atherogenic or anti-atherosclerotic. Reishi, shiitake, and maitake mushrooms are also anti-cholesterol or anti-atherosclerotic. They act as antioxidants. They inhibit platelet aggregation, meaning keeping your blood thin so you don't build up plaques. They inhibit LDL oxidation or inflammation. Again, that's what really causes plaques, so they inhibit that. They block the monocyte adhesion to endothelial cells. Your endothelial cells are the cells that line your arteries. So they block the damage, or the cells that are going to cause damage and adhese to those cells and cause damage, they block that. And they inhibit cholesterol absorption as fiber by binding to the bile acids, which we talked about in the very beginning of this talk. The sixth pharmaceutical effect of mushrooms is hypoglycemic or lowering blood sugar. Fermented shaga, or reishi, turkey tail, shiitake, and maitake mushrooms. And many of these mushroom names you're seeing in this talk over and over and over again for these different pharmaceutical effects. In the studies that I read on these mushrooms, they not only did they decrease someone's appetite and decrease the overall food intake, they also increased their serum insulin levels and decreased their overall blood sugar levels or glucose levels. One of the example studies had 71 patients with type 2 diabetes, which is adult onset diabetes. These patients took 1,800 milligrams of polysaccharide fractions from reishi for 12 weeks, and they demonstrated statistically significant reductions in postprandial, is after eating, glucose levels compared to those that did not take any of the reishi fraction. So there's an evidence-based study, random controlled, showing positive effect of using reishi mushroom tincture to decrease blood sugar in diabetics. Liver protection. Reishi protected mice against hepatic necrosis caused by chloroform in one study. In another study, reishi in a multi-centered, again, double-blind, randomized controlled trials, folks, these are the top type studies to be done, on humans with hepatitis B, 33% treated patients had normal liver enzymes, and 13% actually cleared hepatitis B surface antigen from their serum completely. None of the control group had this level of an outcome. What did they take? They took 600 milligrams of reishi tincture three times per day over a 12-week period to have this effect. And finally, eighth pharmaceutical effect of mushrooms is pain control. And one mushroom that they talked about predominantly was lion's mane. Lion's mane is highly selective against opioid receptors that have, and they have, an anti-pain activity, but not the same side effects as morphine. So the brain fog and the fatigue and the constipation, the lion's mane didn't have that effect. So that could be very beneficial to people with chronic pain. Other mushrooms that were discussed with pain effect were birch polypore and artist's conch. They also had selective inhibitors of certain enzymes that can help decrease pains similar to opioids. This is a list of all the different references I have read in order to present this talk to you. And so in summary, mushrooms are an excellent source, first of all, of protein. They're full of many vitamins, minerals, and phytonutrients, meaning nutrients from plants. Two, they affect the immune system in positive ways to benefit people with many different issues with their immune system, particularly allergies, autoimmune diseases, and even cancers. And the third, they have also numerous other pharmaceutical or pharmacological effects, such as lowering blood sugar, lowering cholesterol, liver protection, and even pain control. I sure hope this helps. Take care. So I hope this podcast has empowered you to optimize your health, because that truly is my mission, to help educate people so that you can learn more and more how to find your way to health and wellness and feel as optimally healthy as you possibly can. Please go to my website and learn much more about the information you need and about the services we offer at my office. It's www.tmurraywellness.com. I also have my own curriculum or program I call the DENT curriculum. That's D-E-N-T, which is an acronym for diet and detox, exercise, nutrition, and treatment. And I offer weekend conferences where anyone in the world can come and learn about how to put a dent in your chronic disease processes through exactly that, diet, detox, exercise, nutrition, and treatment. So again, please go to my website, tmurraywellness.com, or give my office a call at 603-447-3112 and learn more.